This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Gene Keys, Unlocking the Higher Purpose Hidden in Your DNA, by Richard Rudd. Narrated by Jennifer M. Dixon. First Gene Key. From Entropy to Syntropy. Programming Partner, Second Gene Key. Codon Ring, The Ring of Fire, 1, 14. Physiology, liver, amino acid, lysine. The First Shadow, Entropy. The Dance of Shiva. Once upon a time, perhaps even an eon ago, in a land now become a myth, a young man sat in deep reverie beside a great river. Although this river no longer exists today, legend tells us that its descendant may well be the great Yangtze River, which flows through the heart of the land now known as China. Our young man gazed out upon the sinuous, soft waves as they lapped the shores by his feet, when all of a sudden a small turtle emerged from the great green motherlode, and drawing itself proudly out of the water, sat down beside him to share his gentle contemplation. For some considerable time, neither party spoke, until finally our young man, evidently on the cusp of some great universal epiphany, exclaimed to the little turtle in a great and wondrous sigh, "Ah, little one, what's it all about, then?" Rather to his surprise, the turtle revolved in a half-circle and nonchalantly turned its back on the young man, whilst continuing to sun itself lazily and silently. The young man gazed intently at the little creature's back and the intricate interlocking patterns and plates of its shell drying in the spring sunshine. As he gazed, a strange thing began to occur to him. The more he looked, the more he understood the nature of his question. And so it was that he gave himself up to the moment and gazed with all his heart at the little turtle's back. Slowly, almost imperceptibly, everything began to evanesce and disappear. First the turtle, then the cosmos, and finally the young man himself. It is said that when the young man regained consciousness several hours later, the turtle was gone. Ever since that day, humanity has had a means of understanding every aspect within the universe. It was discovered in the interlacing patterns on a humble turtle's back, and in time it became arguably the most profound knowledge ever discovered by a human being. It became the I Ching. The Chinese I Ching is one of the greatest spiritual books of all time, written down thousands of years ago by a legendary Chinese emperor called Fu Shi, it encapsulates a binary code that charts all the seasons and cycles of life. In the book, these life processes were measured by a simple code of 6 lines, either male or female, and mixed together in a total of 64 combinations. The very first archetype that was represented, known as the first hexagram, consisted of 6 male lines all in a column. This archetype was seen as the primary code for all creative life in the universe. Its opposite, the second hexagram, consisted of 6 female lines in a column, and it was seen as the primary code for directing all creative life in the universe. Here, right at the beginning of your journey into your own DNA, hides the greatest secret of all, the secret dynamics of duality. The other thing that we discover right here, at the beginning, is that in the I Ching, and therefore in life, it is always the women who are in charge. As you enter more and more deeply into the mysteries of the Gene Keys, you will gradually begin to understand what is truly meant by this statement. The I Ching is a mathematical mirror of the genetic code, and one can actually reduce all 64 archetypes down to 4 essential principles. These are captured at the beginning and the end of the I Ching sequence itself, the first and second gene keys, and the 63rd and 64th gene keys. These two pairs are rather like the prologue and epilogue to the great book itself. Upon these four principles, or pillars, life is built. The lower frequency of the first gene key, the first shadow, is captured perfectly by the word entropy. A simple definition of entropy is a measure of the disorder or unavailability of energy within a closed system. More entropy means less energy available for doing work. Modern physics and the laws of thermodynamics are based upon the basic perceived law of entropy. According to what we can see through the mind, the universe appears to have a single direction. It moves from order towards chaos. This first shadow keeps the entire planet living at a low level of frequency. It is like a blanket thrown across our civilization. According to our mind, we cannot do anything about entropy. That is our chief problem. Human beings do not generally accept themselves, and when you convert entropy into human feeling, it becomes a kind of deep numbness or sense of gloom. Entropy is, in effect, the opposite of love. If we learn anything from these first two primary gene keys, it is about the nature of duality itself, which is that life cannot exist without polarity. The entire notion of the spectrum of consciousness at the heart of the gene keys revelation depends upon this polarity of the shadow at one end of the spectrum and the siddhi at the other. Each gives birth to the other. Entropy is the black hole to creativity's white hole, and this first gene key is about creativity. The secret to harnessing creativity actually lies in the first shadow. In fact, the secret to every gene key in this book lies in harnessing and accepting the energy latent within each of the 64 shadows. In grasping this fact right here in these two primary gene keys, you truly prepare yourself for the voyage to come. What is the meaning, then, of entropy in your life? As was just mentioned, entropy manifests in human beings as numbness, and this numbness is actually an extremely fertile state of awareness. First of all, you have to understand that it is a chemical state, and secondly, it comes on suddenly and, accepted and fully embraced, it passes just as suddenly. Entropy and creativity are an eternal dance played out within the universe we inhabit. Many mythologies have captured this dance. The dancing figure of Lord Shiva from the Hindu pantheon is just one of these figures, whose dance both destroys and creates all that exists. We do not know exactly why we humans feel gloomy on certain days and happy on other days, despite our thousands of theories. Just as there is external weather, there is also internal weather, and it differs in every human being. Yet it is the very unpredictable nature of these internal weather patterns that so many of us struggle with. When you feel the movement of creation inside you, you are happy. When you feel entropy inside you, you are no longer happy. This continual interplay of energy in your life makes you want to always maintain the happy side and escape the gloomy side. Herein lies the greatest flaw in your nature and the distortion of the true energy of entropy into depression. The first shadow appears in your life whenever you feel flat or sad or low. This is a chemical process that the body enters into, and if you try to comprehend it, find a reason for it, or worst of all, try to fix it, then the natural process will not complete itself cleanly. If you resist this state mentally, one of the great dangers is that you will interfere with its process and fix it inside yourself as depression. because this first shadow triggers the chemical processes that can lead to depression. Most depressive states are the result of resisting certain shadow frequencies within our genetic makeup. Depending on your individual genetic predispositions, you may be more or less prone to feeling low than others. Generally speaking, the more creative a person you are, the more deeply you are affected by this kind of melancholic chemistry. The state of entropy is rather like a vacuum state. Your system is recharging, so the energy within you withdraws into a kind of stasis. The resulting feelings, or lack of feeling, and or enthusiasm, provide a delicate environment for something quite special to occur, if you are patient enough to allow it. This something is the creative process. In other words, your low energy means that something intangible is gestating inside you, even though you cannot yet see it. Only when the state mutates to its expressive stage will you see what the process is about. These low times in your life are therefore very special times, and they generally require aloneness and withdrawal in order for the seed sprouting inside you to germinate. The worst enemy at such times is interference from your own mind, or indeed someone else's mind, wondering what is wrong with you. The programming partner of this first shadow is the second shadow of dislocation, which can only further worsen your state of mental turmoil if you try to intellectually understand what is happening to you. The second shadow tends to fuel the fire of your anxiety, since it gives you the feeling that everything is out of sync with the whole, even though this is not the case. Because of this first shadow, humanity, as a species, is not nearly as creative as it could be. The reason for this is the weight of the collective denial of the natural phases of entropy that individuals experience. This shadow can only be resolved and accepted at an individual level, which takes a great leap of courage, patience, and trust. When you suddenly find yourself blind and lost, the best thing to do is to stay still and allow it to pass gently through your system, giving it the minimum mental attention possible. This deep acceptance of entropy as natural in your life will eventually allow you to unlock its true potential, and in time transcend it entirely. Repressive nature, depressive. The introverted nature of this shadow inevitably leads to depression. States of depression can be caused by the freezing of a low-frequency emotional state due to mental collapse rooted in fear. Once fear takes over the physical system, the entropy goes on pulling more and more energy away from the surface of one's life. Such states can occur at different levels. Some can be permanent, others sporadic. Some can leave one bedridden, others can simply take away the luster in one's eyes. Once a depressive state has been fixed, it can only be broken by the individual and without help. The individual must face down the very fear that caused the depression and shift the frequency of their attitude on all levels. Reactive nature, frenetic. The reactive side of this shadow manifests as a frenetic urge to escape the way one is feeling at all costs. Instead of moving in harmony with entropy by closing their doors and being alone, these people immediately increase their activity and contact with others. They become frenetic in their bid to suppress what is going on inside them and can become engaged in wild schemes or locked in monotonous patterns that quickly undermine their health. Such people put themselves in great danger because they are moving in the opposite direction from the chemistry of their body. Their urge to escape their feelings opens them to all kinds of illnesses in their body that would otherwise never have troubled them. The first gift, freshness. The beauty of melancholy. In most of the ancient creation myths, one of the first manifestations of life is seen as light. In the Bible, in Genesis, this is forever implanted in the Western psyche through the clarion call, "Let there be light." This first gift is rooted in this notion of light as the manifestation of creative energy in the universe. One of the other common creation myths is based upon sound, captured in the aforementioned words spoken out loud by God in the Bible. Here, in this first gift, we have the bringing together of these two essential principles of light and sound. The third great symbol of creativity unites these two principles through the symbol of fire. Fire is perhaps the greatest creative archetype, since it not only consumes, but also transforms. Whilst the second gene key indicates your true direction in life, its programming partner, the first gene key, provides the actual energetic thrust to get you there. Every time an individual moves cleanly through their low-frequency chemical process, they reenact this creation myth. Out of the darkness, suddenly light emerges, and as if by magic, the low-energy field switches and is experienced as joy. This joy comes as unexpectedly as the sadness does, but with the joy also comes the need to express it, and especially to express it through your voice or your art. This first gift is called the gift of freshness, because whatever emerges out of its numbing chemistry field is absolutely new. Every word for every gene key is highly specific, and the word freshness is different, for example, from the word newness. Freshness conveys aliveness, as though it refers to something burning with an inner fire. This is exactly how people, empowered by the first gift, express themselves, as though surrounded by a halo of something brought with them from another world. This first gift can perform wonders within small organizational groupings. As you raise your frequency through this gift, you become a person likely to be singled out by others as a natural-born leader. At the same time, you will find yourself reluctant to assume any leadership role, since you are not in the least bit interested in being followed by others. All the first gift of freshness really wants is to express itself fully through you, so that you can enjoy watching the impact you have on others. As this gift awakens inside your DNA, you will find that you automatically inject life and light into any group of people you are a part of. For these reasons, it is the domain of the family, compact team, or intimate group where the first gift is designed to excel. Freshness is a gift that needs the right environment in order to bloom. It needs open-minded people who give you center stage exactly when you need it. After the fresh energy has been released and your creative impact has been felt, you will usually need to retreat as quickly as possible in order not to spoil the power of your release. Your secret lies in the knowledge that fresh flowers soon wilt. For just as your light can infiltrate any group bringing inspiration and joy, so can your melancholy equally draw energy away from the very same group. The gift of freshness relies on one immortal truth. Creativity can never be controlled. It simply comes when it comes, and when it is absent, there is nothing for you to do but wait and relax. Through the Koran ring, known as the Ring of Fire, this first gene key is chemically bonded to the 14th gene key, whose shadow is compromise. When your creative fire is burning, everyone wants to gather around you and partake of your warmth and inspiration. But when your fire dies to a mere flicker, it is as though you become unnoticeable. If you then try to rekindle your creativity through force of will, you will only end up making huge compromises both with yourself and with others. For you, life is either fully engaged or completely at rest. If your life is marked by such a creative pulse, you will probably have a strong genetic activation within this first gene key. As such, you are here to dissolve the first shadow by being a living example of the unpredictable power of the creative process. Your true power lies in your ability to be alone with yourself and to trust in the power of your own uniqueness and timing. Out of every dark hole into which you dive comes forth a sally of startling and profound creativity. The genius of freshness is to bring something to the world that no other has ever seen before and that no one else could replicate. That the very first gene key in the Book of Life inside you is dedicated to creativity speaks volumes about the human species as a whole. We are designed to overcome the shadow states inside us so that our true genius can emerge and we can add our spirit to the world. It is through individual creativity that all diseases and negative patterns will eventually leave this planet. This is the true meaning of freshness, to be a clear vessel for the creative process so that evolution can move through you and find its way towards a permanent state of eventual love, beauty, and unity. The first city, beauty. The Promethean fire. As we have seen, the first gift is rooted in the power of light and fire. Here, at the Siddic frequency, this light is all that exists, and as it shines through a human awareness, it becomes what we call beauty. Beauty is the reason for life, and life is the reason for beauty. As one of the four great pillars of the cosmos, whenever this city blossoms within a human, that person's life becomes a symbol of directional shift within humanity as a whole. Therefore, it has a great importance within the genetic matrix, even at the gift frequency. These four cornerstone gene keys mentioned earlier, the first, second, 63rd, and 64th, at their highest level, represent a divine archetypal foundation that has been sensed by many different cultures and is embodied in the mystical literature of many diverse pantheons. These four principal energies are known to Kabbalists as the Hayoth HaKadosh, or four holy creatures, and are also embodied in the Tetragrammaton, the so-called mystical name of God. The ancient Gnostic traditions worship them as the four elements. Native Americans knew them as the four directions, and the Egyptians carved them into the figure of the Sphinx. The Chinese I Ching, which is a keystone of the 64 gene keys, has at its foundation the four bigrams, universal principles that underpin the entire foundation of life in our cosmos. In our genetics, the principle of these four archetypes is reflected in the four bases, the four key letters out of which all genetic language is created. In light of all these correlations, we can see the great importance of this first city to our species as a whole. In human beings, the first city is beauty, and as with all cities, it is also reliant upon its programming partner, the second city of unity. Beauty lies in the unity of all. True beauty, when manifested and realized in a human being, presupposes a state of union with the totality. This union, or oneness, is not like anything we can imagine. Its beauty lies in the fact that it is simply so natural that it cannot be expressed. Every time it has been expressed, it has been misunderstood. The only way to understand the Siddic state is to die into it, and that means you must die into beauty. The moment we humans look at something or feel something and proclaim it as beautiful, we have divided from it and left the state of unity. This is not true beauty, although obviously it has its reflections on the lower planes. True beauty is emptiness. There is no one to comprehend it and nothing to feel it. It simply does not exist, and this is its paradox. It is not true beauty if it can be spoken of, copied, or shared. It is unique and inexplicable. Beauty is the expression of unity in human form. At a lower frequency, we can only comprehend beauty through light or sound, whether that be a beautiful face, a sunrise, or a piece of music. Our notion of beauty is always rooted in the presence of something, rather than in its absence. True beauty has a greater connection to absence, to darkness or silence, but even these words cannot approach it being rooted as they are in the world of duality, language, and opposites. When the first city dawns inside you, everything in this cosmos is experienced as beautiful and fresh. Even the shadow state is beautiful. In beauty, nothing lies outside the unity of everything. Everything is experienced as a unique, creative expression of this unity. Everything shines and drips with the essence of its uniqueness, and yet, at the same time, it all shares a single source. When beauty catches fire inside you, in this way, you cannot really become a teacher of others because you now no longer have anything to teach. How are you possibly to teach the experience of beauty? It is a fire that can only be embraced. Thus, the only fate left to you is to live your life as an example of what humanity will one day become, and your expression of that beauty in form will become a testament to our common future. To be awakened in this way is to become a great inspiration to humanity. In the past, many such people have suffered greatly at the hands of the masses. To be so dangerously unique and beautiful is to draw fire from the forces of jealousy and denial. The city of beauty is incomprehensible to normal consciousness, as it can only live out its uniqueness without compromise, no matter what happens to it. Thus, it endures in our mythologies and often becomes attributed only to our deities. It is the creative Promethean fire of the gods that is stolen by those few who have the courage to be obliterated by it. It is the primal masculine creative force within our universe and is embodied in the great lingam or penis of Lord Shiva, as well as all our great cultural symbols of male fertility. Ironically, beauty becomes enshrined as something outside of us, as something we should aspire to, of something we can never really attain whilst alive. In truth, beauty is our nature. It is right here, right now, inside each and every one of us. It is paradoxically found both in our absolute ordinariness and in our utter extraordinariness. You will recall that the foundation of this first gene key at the shadow frequency is the field of entropy, in which energy ceaselessly moves from order to chaos. Well, at the Siddhic level of frequency, where frequency itself is obliterated and transcended, we find ourselves in an eternal field of syntropy. Syntropy refers to the movement of energy within infinite dimensions, all imbued with consciousness and all united by order and love. When the inner divine fire is released through your DNA, you become capable of miraculous power. The codon ring of fire unites the two cities of beauty and bounteousness, the first and 14th gene keys. As such, it represents the energetic germ at the heart of creation and the purpose of existence itself, to create that which is endlessly beautiful, and to imbue it with the awareness that it is endlessly beautiful. Second gene key. Returning to the One. Programming partner, first gene key. Codon ring, the ring of water. 2, 8. Physiology, sternum. Amino acid, phenylalanine. The second shadow, dislocation. As you see it, so it changes. As the most archetypically feminine of all the 64 gene keys, the second gene key and the journey it represents contain a beautifully simple distillation of cosmic wisdom. If you wanted to describe the nature of humanity and the reason for our existence to an alien being, you would have to look no further than this second gene key, as the first gene key tells the story of the great masculine principle of energy and light. The second gene key grounds this story into the world of form. Even at the shadow level of consciousness, this gene key teaches us that there is a purpose to everything in existence. At no point in evolution has anything ever occurred that was not a part of a huge interconnected plan. This is the truth that resides within the feminine principle. It is the binding force for all the seemingly disparate cells and events within existence, and in this sense, it represents the great motherly embrace that pulls us all into a single unity. Your personal resonance to this great truth of our unity determines the overall frequency passing through your DNA. Whether you believe it, deny it, wish for it, or embody it, the truth does not change. There is a force within the universe that choreographs everything, and it is found right inside you. The second shadow is the shadow of dislocation, which is an interesting word. It implies both a sense of being lost in time and space and of dismemberment. However, when you feel lonely, cut off, afraid, or dejected, you have never actually lost your way. It just feels that way. The shadow state is really only a human perspective rooted in your biological functioning. There is not a single moment in your life that is not perfectly in harmony with all creation. Neither is there the slightest possibility that you can make a wrong decision or take a wrong turn in life. It is all simply nuances in your biology. Your biology determines your perception, and your perception is the measuring stick for your evolutionary frequency. Evolutionary frequency refers to the current state of advancement of your awareness. Human awareness is following an evolutionary curve. It began as a primitive form of instinct rooted in our animal origins. Then it took a great leap at a certain point in history as the brain began to evolve, and we moved into this current phase as thinkers. We have now attained our zenith as thinkers and are preparing for another great leap, the leap into a new biological awareness rooted in the nerve ganglia of the solar plexus. You have to understand where you have come from if you are to see where you are going, and where you are going is into the awareness of the unity and oneness of all beings. It is such a paradox. You have never left this state of oneness, and yet the operating system within human biology does not currently allow you to feel this continual sense of connection. It is tempting to look at so-called primitive human awareness, that of the Aboriginal tribal groups still left across our planet, and dream of the return to that primal awareness that existed long before the human brain developed so rapidly. Most Aboriginal cultures do not live with a sense of separation from life itself, so modern human beings are often left with the sense that we have somehow gone adrift. We tend to think that there is something wrong with the direction we have taken, exemplified by the massive technological revolution that is sweeping us before it. But the rapid development of the human brain is a vital bridge to an even greater leap in awareness. Even so, the mind is our great blind spot. In evolving the way it has, it prevents us from inhabiting that older instinctive awareness. And so, across the world, a great fear has taken root, the fear that humanity might actually destroy itself. The fear that we are going in a bad direction comes from the second shadow. It is because we now see ourselves as separate from nature that we feel this great collective fear. Our perception dislocates us from the truth. This collective fear pervades our individual lives as well. The second shadow, along with its programming partner, the first shadow of entropy, pulls us away from living in a state of trust and connectedness, and also reinforces this sense of isolation through our actions. Actions that can come out of trust have very different results from actions that come out of fear. The former creates more energy for everyone, and the latter takes energy away from everyone. In your personal life, if you allow it, the second shadow will affect every decision you make, pulling you into an interference frequency. This means that you don't appear to be in synchronicity with life, so you miss opportunities that would serve you and end up in repetitive patterns that can be very draining for all concerned. However, the second shadow of dislocation is an integral part of the script for life. It actually allows you to experience being out of the universal flow, even though this experience is an illusion. Ultimately, even the level of frequency that courts chaos is a part of the overall fabric of existence. The second shadow allows you to witness your own helplessness as you seek to escape the feeling of dislocation and loneliness. As soon as you enter deeply into this shadow world with your full and honest awareness, it magically appears to change. This shift in your inner honesty precipitates a leap out of the mind and into a newer and far more expansive awareness. One needs to really grasp this insight. You do not change your reality through doing anything. There is a perceptual shift pre-wired into the DNA of every human being, and when it is activated, it occurs in spite of you, as an aspect of your biological evolution. At a certain point, your new awareness simply begins to open up. It does so gradually at first, but over time it coincides with a remarkable improvement in the quality of your life. As you see it, so it changes. In the earliest versions of the I Ching that have come down to us, there appear to be quite a few anomalies with the more modern translations and sequences. One of the most interesting of these concerns is the ordering of the first and second hexagrams. There is strong evidence that the oldest versions began with this second hexagram representing complete yin. The patriarchal systems that translated the original text must have swapped the prime yin for the prime yang. Esoterically and mythically, it makes far more sense to begin with the feminine rather than the masculine. Again, it depends on your frequency. At the shadow frequency, the masculine always comes first, which becomes the way of distrust, separation, and force. The feminine approach, however, is based on unity, surrender, and trust, which are hallmarks of all higher frequencies. Furthermore, one of the translations for this hexagram, known as Kun, is the word field. This is a beautifully apt word to describe this second gene key because it represents the universal field in which we live. To move in harmony with this field is to be oriented, and to move out of harmony with the field is to be disoriented and dislocated. Repressive nature. Lost. The two pattern nuances of the second shadow, that of being lost or regimented, describe the state of the great majority of mankind. In the case of the repressed nature, being lost describes the state of being out of alignment with one's true universal destiny. The repressive nature aptly describes the path of materialism and selfishness, which follows its own path without regard to the greater environment. Our true destiny is to awaken out of our selfishness to our universality. Those with no sense of the spiritual dimension to life inhabit this state of being lost, and the byproduct of being lost is misery and suffering. Without the experience of a direct connection to the greater cosmic forces, one has nothing within to bolster one in dealing with life's trials. Life itself seems to have no purpose. Without a cosmic connection within one's being, one will always flounder in the world. Reactive nature, regimented. The reverse pole of this shadow is the enforcement of an external rhythm or structure over the top of life. This stems from deep anger that has never been resolved. Regimentation actually describes many of the world's great religions, which put themselves between an individual and their direct experience of the divine. Regimentation can also describe science, which attempts to organize life into some form of meaningful and logical framework. Anything that tries to control life and pin it down emerges from the reactive side of the second shadow. None of this is to say that religion and science are wrong, except when they serve to obscure the hidden harmony that lies within an individual. The true meaning and purpose of life is only to be found within one's heart, in the mystical experience of moving in perfect synchronization with all that is. The second gift, orientation, mineral magnetism. The whole process described in the second shadow involves orientation, the second gift. At the shadow frequency, you experience disorientation, whereas as you begin to reach into the gift dimension, you become reoriented. Again, as was discussed in the second shadow, there is no question of any doing on your part as this shift in your process engages, even though it may feel to you as though you are doing it quite a lot. Perhaps you started going to a therapist who helped you to see aspects of your shadow, which in turn began to change your decisions and therefore your life. Perhaps you discovered a great mystical system or teacher who catalyzed this process. Perhaps it happened as a result of a personal crisis, or perhaps it just spontaneously occurred as a complete surprise to you. The point is that all human life follows the same archetypal pattern laid down inside your DNA. Evolution itself is drawing you inexorably along the path towards awareness of your unity and oneness. The gift of orientation has two faces. It either comes as a shift in your awareness that then affects your actions, or it comes as a shift in your actions which then catalyzes a shift in your awareness. Whichever tone your experience takes, there are a number of indicators that precede your permanently residing at the gift level of frequency. One of the key experiences that people have is an increased feeling and occurrence of synchronicity. Synchronicity is the direct manifestation of the gift of orientation. It allows you to peep through the keyhole of existence and place yourself in a wider perceptual context. Synchronicities cannot be forcibly created, but flow out of the feminine nature of the second gift. In other words, they happen when you are not looking. As your awareness begins to operate at its highest biological level through the solar plexus system, so you fall into an easier rhythm of life. You no longer feel dislocated, but begin to experience life in a more and more magical dimension. One of the other indicators of your rising awareness is to be found in the eighth gift of style. Through the chemical family known as the Ring of Water, this second gift shares a strong genetic link with the eighth gift, which presents as a new and original way of living. As you become oriented into a wider context, your real face begins to show itself in the world. Instead of being weighed down by your changing moods and commitments, you use them as a means of developing a new flair. You also begin to override the perceptions and projections of others. In short, you begin to enjoy life so much that this rising energy spills over into your life as panache, a unique sense of individual style that is inimitable and always fresh, if even at times a little dangerous. Your panache or style is the sign of another paradox, that as you come more into contact with your unity with all creatures, you also witness an enhancement in your own uniqueness, particularly through your creative process. The second gift has a special role within your DNA, in that it creates a kind of attractor field around you. It not only unifies the microcosm with the macrocosm, but it also unites matter and spirit. A secret resides in the chemicals and amino acids for which this gene key codes. In every human being, there are certain minerals that have magnetic properties, and this second gift concerns the chemical composition and purpose of these minerals. These minerals in our bodies, and particularly those in our endocrine glands, appear to tell us how to live life in or out of harmony. For example, in the tissues of the pineal gland, biologists have discovered a ferrous chemical known as magnetite. This mineral has been proposed as a key in linking electromagnetic activity to cellular function. The fact that it has also been found in most animals suggests that all creatures have a built-in magnetic guidance system that keeps them in alignment with wider rhythms. It is through this magnetism that all life is linked, from the spin of the atom to the wheeling of the great galaxies. As the frequency through the second gift rises, you live more harmonically and the electromagnetic power of your aura increases. The more you let go into the feminine yielding quality of this gift, the more universal power floods through you. Your timing becomes more and more fine-tuned, so much so that if you find yourself out of harmony, the magnetic mineral transducers in your body immediately convey this to your brain. It is through the second gift that you can see the hidden agenda of life, to bring all beings into awareness of their unity. The magnetic attractor field around a person who is centered in the second gift exerts a powerful effect on all those around it, meaning that harmony is catching. This is why people who are deeply surrendered and attuned to life's processes can be so empowering. They can intuitively sense how surrendered or resistant others are to the great truth of their universality. Over time, such people bring others into their own personal harmony through the magnetic power of their aura. The second Siddhi, Unity, Divine Logic. The second Siddhi describes the experience of enlightenment or awakening. It is the cornerstone of all the Siddhic states, being as it is the essence of the Divine Feminine. The Divine Feminine pole has a great mystery within it, because in a certain sense it cannot be said to be a pole at all. The masculine pole is very simple and straightforward, but the feminine is beyond any sense of reason and understanding. The masculine principle is really an externalization of the feminine rather than a duality. At the Siddhic level, there is no such thing as duality. Duality is destroyed by a strange kind of divine logic. At this heightened level of awareness, mathematics works differently than on the mental level. 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2, but always makes 3. The only numbers that really exist at the Siddhic level are 1 and 3. 1 is 1. It is consciousness resting in its own nature. It is the ultimate state of yin or femininity, or, as this second hexagram is often known, it is the receptive. Words such as receptive, feminine, yielding, or mother can be misleading, as we tend to understand them as poles with opposites. However, they hint at what lies beyond them, so we need to consider them in a different way if we are to grasp what the second Siddhi really means. This is something that can only be grasped intuitively. Thus, when the One externalizes itself as a manifestation in form, it has not created a duality, but a trinity. Every duality is really a relationship, and every relationship is really a three. There is a man, a woman, and instantly there is also a couple. The relationship itself. In divine mathematics, the number two is always an illusion. It cannot logically exist. If you can say anything at all about the number two, you might say it is a bridge, a dynamic process that is instantaneously transmuted before it is even born. There are concepts that cannot be approached with ordinary logic, just like the quantum particles and physics that avoid our definition because they appear to be linked to our very perceptual apparatus. Oneness cannot be comprehended, only lived. Enlightenment is not an experience. This is a sentence to meditate upon, like a Zen koan. If you see oneness as an experience to be attained, or that may one day happen to you, then you are caught within that straight line between two points. The third thing is transcendence. It does not occur to you, rather, it negates you. Ironically, transcendence does not take you away from life, as its name might suggest. It places you right in the heart of life, where you have always been. It unifies all opposites, ends all riddles, leaves all mysteries just as they are, and brings a sense of trust that cannot be described. One cannot even really use a word like trust to describe the city of unity, because trust suggests duality again, that there is somehow a truster and a trustee. This is the wonderful dilemma of the siddhic state. As do all the siddhis, the second siddhi carries a specific mythology when it manifests through an individual in the world of form. As one of the primary pillars of our DNA, the life of one who lives within this city is of great relevance to our evolutionary history. These beings exert an enormous magnetic influence on our entire planet. Although it may sound like science fiction, the expression of the second city in a human being actually changes the direction of the Earth as it moves through space. The second city can only therefore be born in the world of humanity if our whole species makes a leap in consciousness. In order for such a leap to be made, we have to wait for a certain set of geometric coordinates to line up in the cosmos. These are the alignments that astrologers are always seeking to find and understand in the heavens. The second city is mythically represented by the Star of Bethlehem in the Christ myth. Other cultures also have stories of great beings connected to the appearance or alignment of stars and comets in the heavens. This city therefore tells us something about our ultimate state of consciousness. It is linked not only to when we are, but also to where we are. The Earth itself is on a trajectory through the galaxy, and at certain points in our time frame, it moves into alignment with other geometric aspects of the cosmos. The ancient Mayans, for example, believed that in the year 2012, the Earth would be in direct alignment with the hub of our galaxy, which for them signified the birth of an age of heightened consciousness. At such junctures in time and space, the second city may well incarnate again on our planet, and in the case of 2012, it is most likely to do so through a whole generation rather than through a single individual. According to the planetary genetic time clock that is derived from the I Ching, we will experience another great axis point in the year 2027, as the precession of the equinoxes transits into the 55th gene key, opening up the potential for a genetic shift in humanity. Both dates, 2012 and 2027, are hugely significant within the time frame of the publication of this book, but many axis points will follow in the near and far future. The second city is the original nature of consciousness itself. and it manifests as a highly beautiful plan unfolding in time and space, swept along by the currents of evolution. All such mythic journeys echo the journey of the Earth and of our universe, and as they all begin by leaving the warm comfort of the mother and the home, so they must one day return again to that same embrace. This indeed is our final destiny as a species, to realize our state of oneness and unity with all that is. Third Gene Key. Through the Eyes of a Child. Programming Partner, 50th Gene Key. Codon Ring, the Ring of Life and Death. 3, 20, 23, 24, 27, 42. Physiology, navel. Amino acid, leucine. The Third Shadow, Chaos. From Chaos to Cosmos. The third shadow lies at the core of all our beliefs that the human individual is basically powerless in comparison to nature or the infinite. This is the programming domain of both religion and science, the two cornerstones of human belief. On the one hand, we have religion, which separates humanity from nature by the interposition of a god or gods, thereby creating a division in our entire unconscious reality. This reality must then be based upon the worship of either our own or someone else's projection of what God is. Such a situation, in turn, creates the notion of free will and its judgment by the presiding deity. On the other hand, we have science, which sees our nature as predetermined by our genes, which come pre-programmed only for survival, thus leaving all human beings victims of the vagaries of chance. In either scenario, the individual comes off badly. We are either shown divinity, only to be denied it, or we are shown freedom, and then placed in a world of merciless competition in which only the lucky or strong can thrive. Perhaps more than any other, the third shadow captures the essence of the role of human DNA through an understanding of the structure of the single cell, the prime unit of life on our planet. Through an understanding of the single cell, we will see how both of the belief systems have grown out of a very natural, organic progression that has brought us to exactly where we stand now, at a great evolutionary fork. As a planetary consciousness, we now stand before a chasm, and humanity's response to this threshold must either lead to chaos or it must lead to cosmos. Never before in history has the future of our entire planet and all its organisms hung in the balance of human behavior. It is interesting to note that the words chasm and chaos are derived from the same root, since this third gene key governs what we humans understand as chaos. It is also intriguing to note that the original meaning of the word chaos is closer to primordial space. It was only due to a misunderstanding based on fear that the word came to be equated with disorder. In order to get to the bottom of the profound mystery within the third shadow, it is perhaps helpful to overview the direction of modern scientific thinking in response to our current evolutionary fork. Contemporary mainstream scientific thinking is still based mostly upon two giants, Newton in physics and Darwin in biology. Despite what we hear, the scientific world is still reeling from the aftershock of Einstein and what he discovered. Einstein's breakthrough opened physics and all of science to vast dimensions that can barely be comprehended. All an honest physicist can say for sure anymore is that the very bedrock of scientific thinking has been so severely shaken that no scientific premise can ever be taken for granted again. Einstein's quantum world has still not filtered through to mainstream biology, except for a few brave pioneers who are willing to put their reputations on the line. Darwin's dogma of genetic determinism prevails and still remains at the root of all modern medical practice. However, a new quantum biology is indeed in the process of forming at the frontiers of modern science, and it holds many fascinating possibilities. At the core of the new biology,